a safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola.
Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. We every week try to bring you fresh voices and new information about the pro-life cause, about the spiritual and emotional and mental health journey after the choice for abortion. And often we also try to talk about preventing abortion. We try to talk about helping those that it hurts before it ever even becomes a choice. Tonight our guest is Dr. Miriam Grossman, and because she is a physician, a psychiatrist, we're going to have a very candid conversation about sexual practices and about making healthy choices. And so this will be a mature version of Cradle My Heart Radio, and I would recommend that younger children, if you're not comfortable with them hearing a candid discussion about adult, what should be adult practices. Unfortunately, we're going to learn not always. But if you're uncomfortable with your children hearing this conversation, I would ask you to please remove them. And if you are sensitive, please join us again next week. Dr. Grossman is a physician, as I mentioned. She's an author, a public speaker, and media commentator. She's known internationally for her courage in breaking ranks and calling foul on the sex ed industry. And she's been on hundreds of radio, news, and television shows. She's lectured at the British House of Lords and the UN. She speaks to all sorts of groups, including parents and policymakers and health professionals, on the importance of childhood innocence and the dangers of a powerful sex education lobby that promotes sexual license instead of sexual health. As to her credentials, Dr. Grossman graduated with honors from Bryn Mawr and from NYU Medical School, and then completed an internship in pediatrics at Beth Israel in New York City and a residency in psychiatry at North Shore University Hospital Cornell, and followed by a fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry at the same institution. She's a former campus psychiatrist at UCLA, and it was there that she wrote Unprotected: A Campus Psychiatrist Reveals How Political Correctness in Her Profession Endangers Every Student. She also has a new book that we're going to be discussing tonight, You're Teaching My Child What? Dr. Grossman, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Oh, thank you, Kim, very much for having me on.
We spoke a number of years ago when I was working at a different radio station, when Unprotected had first come out under the authorship Anonymous MD, and you chose to write that fearing backlash, or I'm not certain, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Tell me about that choice to release that book anonymously.
Well, that was a choice that was made because at the time that I was writing the book, I was unaware of the huge numbers of people and communities that would be supportive of my work, and I felt isolated and concerned what the repercussions might be of exposing some of the things that were going on in my workplace. And you know, with books, it takes a lot, well, at least then it did. It took many, many months, I think 9 months, from the beginning to the actual publication of the book, the beginning of the design, that is. And decisions had to be made about the cover and the graphics, and I had to decide, am I going to put my name on this book or not? And honestly, I was worried. I was kind of scared, so I decided not to put my name on it. And what happened is that over the next few months after that decision was made, I copies of the manuscript were sent out to lots of different people, and I got such an enthusiastic response, and there was so much support that by the time the book came out, I was actually ready to come out of the closet, so to speak,
sure,
if you'll permit. And I was on the Dr. Laura show, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, a few days after the book was published, and she went ahead and identified who I was. And, you know, I've been very, very open and visible since that time.
Was there a repercussion in-house at UCLA? I mean, I know anytime someone's writing about what's going on in our workplace, you know, there are boundaries and guidelines we have to, you know, concern ourselves with. How was it received on campus?
I don't want to talk too much about that, but it was many of my colleagues did not receive it warmly, to say the least. And the ones that did so privately and would come to me in my office behind closed doors and say, I totally agree with what you've written, but not publicly. And it's a terrible situation that on our college campuses, as I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, places that are supposed to be, you know, centers of free thought and sharing of ideas, open sharing of ideas. That's what a university is supposed to be all about. And places in which diversity is celebrated, that certain types of diversity is not at all celebrated, and that's the diversity of ideas and ideology. And the ideas that I brought forth in my book Unprotected and in the second book, You're Teaching My Child What, really go against essential values of the university and of the campus culture, and unfortunately of also the mental health centers on most college campuses, which promote lifestyles which, as we're going to discuss now, are hazardous.
So you're sounding an alarm, really, with that first book. I mean, you're saying, here I am in my office, and I'm seeing case after case, client after client, student after student, of people grappling with brokenness based on following the conventional wisdom, based on doing what, you know, the prevailing cultural ethos says is the right thing to do.
That's correct.
And what is that ethos anyway? Mutually consenting, is that the only guideline that young women in particular as students are given on college campuses?
Mutual consenting, yes, and a use of a condom. Not also that alcohol should not be mixed in because it impairs decision making. So, you know, if those three conditions are met, I would say that yes, that would be, that's a situation that gets a thumbs up, you could say. But let me just explain that, you know, I certainly didn't go into my position there at UCLA with anything like this in mind. I just wanted to go and be a doctor and help young people on campus. And I did that for many, many years. It was only after quite a while, after 5 or 6 years, that I began to notice a pattern of kids that were coming in, mostly young women who were in distress, often related to some sexual decision that they had made. And also what happened is that we computerized our records, and I got easy access to the student's health record, which I never had before. So I was able, when I saw a student, to look up their health record and their visits to the other clinic on campus. In other words, we were mental health, but there was a student health center, and I was able to discover just how many of them, you know, had sexually transmitted diseases or, were going in for the morning after pill or to be tested for HIV because they were worried or they had, you know, multiple abortions. And so that helped to open my eyes as well, because sometimes you don't even bring up these questions, or I didn't always bring up these things when I was doing an intake with a student. But now that I sort of became aware of these issues, I began to bring it up. And students also don't always bring up issues, not only students, but people in general. When you go in to see a psychologist or a social worker or another mental health professional, you don't always bring up everything, and even if you're directly asked about it. But certainly if you're not asked, And so I began to realize, hey, this is something I'm not, it hasn't been on my radar screen, the sexual lives of my patients and how that may have an effect on what they're coming in for, anxiety and trouble sleeping and depression and, you know, maybe these things are linked. Hmm. And so that's how it all started.
Dr. Miriam Grossman is our guest, and we've been discussing her book, Unprotected. A campus psychiatrist reveals how political correctness in her profession endangers every student. And I love the fact that, you know, that you're not just describing the problem here. You're saying there's a reason that this problem exists, and you're putting the responsibility where it belongs, in the medical profession, in the mental health helping field. And we can talk about that, and I hope you will help us shed light on that, because it was very eye-opening for me to learn those parts of the story that you're writing for us. Dr. Grossman also has a small booklet called Sense and Sexuality, The College Girl's Guide to Real Protection in a Hooked Up World, and it's a very practical guide. We're going to talk about that in the upcoming segment here, as well as her now comprehensive volume, Exposing the Comprehensive Sex Ed Industry. And that book is titled You're Teaching My Child What? This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Our guest is Dr. Miriam Grossman, and you'll find a link to her website at ours@cradlemyheart.org. You can learn more about her work, access her articles, and see her speaking schedule. We'll continue with our conversation in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us here at Cradle My Heart.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Back to Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola.
Dr. Miriam Grossman is our guest tonight on Cradle My Heart Radio, and we're talking about her books, Unprotected, as well as You're Teaching My Child What? Dr. Grossman is a former campus psychiatrist at UCLA, and her work dealing with students in particular led her to take a look at what are the roots of the attitudes that students have. Why are large numbers of girls in particular, our young women students, why are such large numbers of them showing up with sexually transmitted diseases, with depression as a result of hookup culture and one-night stands? And so, Dr. Grossman, this is where I really want to focus our conversation tonight, because I think it's very surprising. It was to me as I worked my way through your book, You're Teaching My Child What?, that this is not, you know, we talked briefly in the first segment that, okay, if you have a talk with your kids and you don't have any character education you're putting on it, you're probably telling them, well, don't drink and use a condom and be sure that it's mutually consenting, you know, no sexual harassment, and don't allow yourself to be put in a position of being forced into sex. And that's it. That's the instruction that we're given. But there's a reason. You're claiming there's a very strong reason that those parameters are so loose, and I'd like you to talk about that as well as, of course, some of the consequences that you're seeing as a result of this as policy.
Okay, sure. So let me first say as a preface that, because of time constraints, I'll just be touching on a few subjects right now. But people can get loads and loads of information from my website, on which there's articles, there's a blog, there's a link to a report that I wrote that analyzed the sex education program offered in New York City public schools. And that's a document that's almost 30 pages long that can be downloaded for free, and it really, really is just packed full of scientific facts, information explaining, you know, what parents need to know and look for in their kids' curricula at school, et cetera. So let's see. There's just, you know, there's so much. There's a whole world of information out there that's actually relatively new in the past 10, 20.
Well, and let's start with where the average student starts. So I have a question about, let's say, even sexual orientation, or maybe that's a little too tough to start there, but I have a question about becoming sexually active. So I don't want to talk with my parents. I had a basic biology conversation. I want to know more.
Okay.
What can I do to prevent pregnancy? What can I do to keep myself healthy? Where am I likely to go as a student to try to get that information?
Okay, good place to start. I mean, look, college students obviously have already learned quite a bit about sexuality, either through sex education or online or through personal experience, what have you. And what most of them have been hearing for years is that people are ready to have sex when they feel ready. And that is the message that's put out there in most comprehensive sex education programs, certainly Planned Parenthood and the big ones that are out there, basically say that no one can tell you when you're ready, only you know. Now, that is just patently false because there is plenty of information and biological facts available to us as health practitioners that we need to be sharing with young people regarding that question. Girls and boys are vastly different, both physically and emotionally and physiologically. And if you're only talking here about let's just take first the physical aspects of sexuality and the dangers of early sexual behavior, a girl is at much higher risk than a boy is for sexually transmitted diseases if she has sex earlier in her life with multiple partners. Early meaning adolescence, really, or I mean, everyone is different, but we know that the cervix of a girl, a teen girl, the cervix being the entrance to the uterus, where cervical cancer occurs, the cervix is immature until a young woman reaches her early 20s. And an immature cervix is more susceptible to infection. The reason for that is because it's only a portion of the center of the cervix is only covered by a layer of cells, which is one layer thick. And as she gets older, year by year, the cervix matures, and it grows a tougher covering, and it's much more difficult for bacteria and viruses to penetrate and infect. One of the reasons why one in four teen girls in this country has a sexually transmitted infection is because of that immature cervix. And, you know, there's no reason why we can't be telling fifth and sixth graders about this. We need to be showing images of the immature cervix to these kids. And you know, it's our obligation, the same way that we would tell them about unhealthy fats or diabetes or
smoking,
obesity,
sure,
or tanning salons.
You know, and Dr. Grossman, I hate to interrupt, but I think it's, you know, you're refuting this from a medical basis. But in fact, isn't this idea of you're ready when you feel ready, isn't that kind of psychologically rooted that, oh, you know, you're sexual from birth, and so when your hormones kick in at puberty, it's all just lovely and healthy and natural and good?
Well, yeah. I mean, the idea that you're ready when you think you're ready comes from an ideology that's based on sexual freedom and sexual rights, that everyone, regardless of their age, has the right to be sexually active, has the right to get contraceptives and have abortions. That comes from an ideology, you know, that goes back to Kinsey, and that's a whole other story. But what I'm trying to explain now with the cervix is just one piece of information, mm-hmm, that absolutely refutes that idea that having sex at an early age is really fine if you you know, it's consensual and you feel ready and you use a condom, et cetera. But there's many, many other reasons that early sexual behavior is hazardous. There's biological reasons, emotional reasons that indicate that an immature brain is simply not prepared to make those kind of huge decisions. Having sex, as we know, can lead just one event, one encounter can create a long-term life-changing consequences, not only a pregnancy, an STD, an intense attachment to another person. It's not something to be taken lightly. And comprehensive sex education and Planned Parenthood and their cohorts are taking sexuality in adolescence very lightly. And this is just something that I object to and many people object to, and that parents have to be aware of, that kids need to be convinced that sexuality is not just another recreational behavior.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Miriam Grossman is our guest. And Dr. Grossman, when you say they're taking it lightly, they're also putting a lot of structure on it for young people, particularly online. Let's talk about some of your findings about the horrific information that's out there targeted at young people, very young people, through Planned Parenthood and some of their companion groups.
Well, part of, the ideology of sexual freedom at all times of life is that there should be unlimited information available to people, at any age. So that to the idea of childhood innocence, in other words, the idea that kids, young kids are not ready to hear about certain information, it would be argued that it's just simply that's a fault, that's incorrect, and that it's due to society's, the Judeo-Christian mentality of ancient, ways of thinking, and that this is a very harmful way of thinking because it's repressive and so on and so forth. So the idea of childhood innocence is just not one that exists in that ideology, and therefore you'll see sex ed programs where kids as young as 5 years old are told way too much. It's too much too soon. And as a child psychiatrist, I argue that kids are just not developmentally prepared to hear about sexual intercourse, to hear about sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, homosexuality, and so on and so forth. It's not something that we should be putting in front of our kids. They're not ready for it. There's no reason for it except to promote an ideology in which kids themselves are sexualized. Now, who would want to do that? Who would want to sexualize young children? Well, if you go back to the history of sex education, which is what you have to do in order to understand this kind of madness that we have right now, you have to go back to the 50s and 60s and see who were the founders. Sex education really grew out of Kinsey, his movement, his followers, and I write about how Kinsey himself was a deeply disturbed human being, and his private sexual life was what word can I use? Depraved, pathological, very, very ill. I don't want to. There's a biography if people want to know the lurid details of his life. There's an official biography that was written in 1999, decades after Kinsey died and decades after his ideas had been widely accepted. And this biography by James Jones depicts graphically how this man lived. And I'm telling you, I'm a psychiatrist. I've I've heard a lot of stories and met some pretty disturbed people. And this guy, what can I tell you? I mean, if he was under my care, I would have hospitalized him in a locked psychiatric unit. And that's how ill he was. Mm. And he also believed in, he was a pedophile. He believed that babies are sexual, that babies have orgasms. He collected quote-unquote data from child molesters, from individuals who were actually, you know, incarcerated for being child abusers. It's a very, I'm sure you've probably heard and hopefully had on your program Judith Reisman, who is the person that single-handedly exposed the story of Kinsey and his crimes. If you haven't had her on, I highly, highly recommend her. She's the one she can tell the whole story there. Mm-hmm. But just to get back to what we were discussing, the idea that a child is ready for sex, to hear about sex, to have sex, it comes from the minds of people who want to be touching children in abusive and illegal ways.
Mm. Dr. Miriam Grossman, our guest, we're going to return after a very short break. Stay with us. More about the roots of comprehensive sex education, not rooted in science, in fact, rooted in ideology and, as you've heard, in a twisted mentality of one or two individuals, and yet it has become a national policy. And now people like Dr. Grossman are having to deal with the fallout in the lives of the young people who have adopted these principles. Stay with us, and we'll talk more about the damage that's being done by comprehensive sex education in the lives of the people who've adopted it. Stay with us. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Back live to Cradle My Heart with Kim Cattola.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Tonight, our guest, Dr. Miriam Grossman, and her website is miriamgrossmanmd.com. Lots of great resources there. And, of course, we have it linked at cradlemyheart.org if you didn't have your pencil handy. I encourage you to go to her website. I encourage you to pick up her books, Unprotected and You're Teaching My Child What, because there's no way we can possibly present all of her findings tonight. And you will be amazed. And if, like me, you will be appalled by what you find out when you understand why there is such a widespread hookup culture. It's not a random thing that morals didn't change overnight, and a lifestyle of sexual license didn't simply come in because anybody understood that this was going to be beneficial to the people who have been adopting it, particularly young people, starting in high school. But definitely, Dr. Grossman is a former campus psychiatrist at UCLA, and she was seeing the fallout there. I want to talk, Dr. Grossman, about hookup culture and the negative impact, particularly on young women. Wow. I mean, that thing has been popularized in movies and songs, and it's sort of like the, I'm of an age where women's liberation, I was around for bra burning and all of that the first time around. And, you know, the idea is that in order to be liberated, women had to have a sexuality that mirrored men, no consequences. And I think that's what hookup culture would also, you know, promote as empowering to women. Is hookup culture empowering to young women?
Oh, no, no, no. The hookup culture is toxic to young women. And unfortunately, my profession, the medical health profession, the mental health profession, is failing young women by not pointing that out to them and not warning them of all the pitfalls. Now, I'm not saying that every single young woman out there is going to suffer seriously from hooking up, because there's always exceptions. But I'm certain that the majority of young women that are participating in that lifestyle, meaning a hookup is generally defined as an unplanned sexual encounter between two people who have no plans to see one another again. And I've heard now from many, many young people that the way things are on college campuses, if you want to meet someone, if you want to have a social life, you've got to be hooking up. And that people often will hook up before they really know each other, just to find out whether it's worthwhile getting to know each other or not. And you know, it's just so upside down, and it's so contrary to what we're learning about in science about sexuality and bonding and emotional bonding and the power of touch and intimacy, even scent. I mean, science is, it's so amazing at the same time that the culture is going in one direction, science going the other direction. Science is underscoring how sensitive we are, especially young women, more so than men, to touch and to intimacy and sexuality. And that when we engage in those behaviors, our brain actually sends out a message, a hormone, that says, you're with someone special now. You can love this person. You can relax and feel good. You can trust this person. And that hormone is called oxytocin, not OxyContin. People often get confused. That's a narcotic pain medication. But oxytocin, which is a naturally occurring, primarily female hormone, that is, we've known now for 100 years or so that this was the hormone released during labor and delivery and also during nursing, which makes just perfect sense, because when you're delivering a child and when you're nursing that child, you know, a process of emotional attachment toward that person, toward your child, makes a lot of sense. But this hormone is also released during intimate behavior, and it doesn't matter if this is, you know, your dear spouse that you trust and know and, you know, are going to spend your life with, or a random guy that you picked up at a bar and you'll never see him again. Your body, you know, doesn't know. So young women and men also, everyone needs to be aware of that. I write about that also in the pamphlet that you mentioned before, Sense and Sexuality, which people can access on my website as well, that people need to understand their biology. And this is withheld, this is omitted from comprehensive, so-called, right? It's called comprehensive, right? And there's such a long list of things that are not included, and this is one of them. There's a difference between men and women. Men also get attached, obviously, to people with whom they're intimate, but it does appear that women are wired so that that is facilitated and happens more quickly. And all of us know, without any problem, you can think of people that you've known in your life who have become attached inadvertently to somebody, and then, you know, they wake up later on and just think, like, this guy's a jerk. You know, how did I get attached to him? Well, you know, you were intimate, and you were, you know, your body was giving you this message, and you were close and touching and inhaling his scent. And all these things actually have an effect on our nervous system.
So I'm thinking, too, this could affect you with, even if you didn't feel that you were attached, even if you didn't, so to say, want to see the person again, you may have feelings that are unfocused,
of
just,
yes,
being
of
unsettled,
course,
being depressed, not feeling fulfilled, not understanding what's wrong with you, if you
well,
will.
Well, of course, that's, you know, this is a part of what really drove me to writing this book and doing this research, because girls would come into my office, young women would come into my office, and they wouldn't know, like, why am I Dr. Grossman, I don't know, I have these crying spells, I don't know, I'm I'm kind of down. I don't know what's going on. And I would dig with them and dig and dig, like, what's going on in your life? And finally, you know, this would happen with quite a few people. We would discover, well, you know, I've been seeing this guy. I've been hooking up, and he only wants the sex. And I'd really like to have more than that. And I like him, and I think about him. And they'd say, like, I can't stop thinking about him, Dr. Grossman. What's wrong with me? So it's a double whammy, because not only do they get attached to someone that whose last intention is to become attached, not only that, but then they think there's something wrong with them for becoming attached, because they look around and they look at what they're being taught and what's out there, you know, on what they think is going on with other people, and they think, oh, everyone's hooking up. I'm the only one that got attached to this guy. Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I hook up and make it meaningless?
Striving for meaninglessness. Wow. That's really deep. And in your booklet, Sense and Sexuality, The College Girl's Guide to Real Protection in a Hooked Up World, there are some really startling statistics about, you know, 84% of women said that after having sex a few times, they want to know where things stand, even if they don't necessarily want to pursue a relationship. So there's this sort of free-floating vulnerability. 91% of girls admit to having feelings of regret for hooking up. Guilt, feeling used are common. Not something that you get told in the movies or on the websites that are promoting how we ought to behave.
Right. And, you know, when the so-called feminists deal with this issue, they say that those girls are only feeling badly because society is making them feel badly, you know, and that's the problem. You know, they blame everything on society instead of, you know, science is telling us that certain things are happening, that intimacy really is supposed to be intimate. Like, wow, who would have thought that? Intimacy means intimate, that it's something special, it's something private, it's something with, you know, that's not done with everyone out there just for a night's pleasure. So they're getting it wrong. And you're right, I do present those statistics in the pamphlet. And by the way, I want people to know that the pamphlet is very, very popular, not only on college campuses, but in high schools. And it's available at cost. I mean, there's no profit being made on this little pamphlet. It's sold like for, I don't know, 42 cents each or something like that. And it's also available in Spanish.
Dr. Miriam Grossman, MD, or miriamgrossmanmd.com is the website, and it's linked at cradlemyheart.org for all of Dr. Grossman's resources. And we'll continue after a short break. Stay with us. We're going to talk about sexually transmitted diseases and what you need to know, especially about quote-unquote protection. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Thanks for being with us tonight. More with Dr. Miriam Grossman coming up.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola.
Dr. Miriam Grossman joins us tonight on Cradle My Heart Radio, talking about her work to expose comprehensive sex education for the dangerous ideology that it is. You're still hearing, Dr. Grossman, I'm still hearing that condoms are the answer, and that's what young people need, and if we could just get them to use them and use them properly, everything would be solved. It's so far from the truth. Tell us what we really need to know about sexually transmitted diseases.
Yes, if you listen to the comprehensive sex ed people, they will continue to argue over and over and over again all these years and decades the same thing. The problem is kids don't have access to condoms, they don't know how to use them, they need to be given out for free. You know, huge truckloads of condoms need to be dumped in front of every high school, and, you know, they need to learn how to put them on, and so on and so forth. That girls need to be taught how to negotiate so that, you know, she can convince the guy to wear one, and this is their focus. Well, There are a number of problems with that argument. First of all, kids tend, teens tend to use a part of their brain which is immature when it comes to these types of decisions. The teen brain is immature, just like most of the body is, and we know that it's not fully adult until the mid-20s. And what that means is that the area of the brain that is like the CEO, like the mature, thoughtful, planning, you know, the part of the brain that considers the pros and cons, the consequences, what's going to happen if I do this, that part is the last part to mature. And that at moments of high stimulation, teens are very likely to just impulsively act and do what feels good. Now, what that means is that even if they have the condom in their pocket and they have checked, you know, to make sure that it's not expired and that, you know, that they're able to stop their interaction and put on the condom correctly, that's unlikely to happen. But even if it does happen, the condom itself is not, it's not 100% protection by any means. The amount of protection that's afforded by a condom depends on what bug you're talking about, what organism, and it can range from zero to maybe 80%. The lower number being with the viruses such as the human papillomavirus, the herpes virus, which can live on skin that is not covered by the condom at all, and that's why these viruses are so common. The 80% figure is probably accurate for preventing transmission of HIV, because HIV is not on the skin; it's in the semen, in the blood, and a condom is probably around 80% effective in preventing transmission. Which, you know, most people, if it's life and death, which HIV is, 80% is not high enough. And that's, we're talking here about vaginal intercourse, okay? If we begin to talk about anal intercourse, which is promoted to young people as another choice, another option available to them, then, you know, all these numbers are you have to dismiss these numbers, because we really don't have good studies on the effectiveness of condoms when it comes to anal intercourse, and we have every reason to believe that the numbers are going to be much, much lower because of the anatomy and physiology and the amount of friction, and there's no lubrication, and so on and so forth. So anal intercourse, I will just take 1 second to say, is a highly high-risk behavior that I advise no one, regardless of sexual orientation. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. It's not a safe behavior with or without a condom. It is simply too high risk for the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases and other conditions. And I might add that until about 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, the FDA website had the same message, that anal intercourse is too dangerous an activity to engage in, even with a condom. The FDA changed their website so that now it doesn't have that message. Now, do you think, Kim, that biology has changed, that physiology has changed, allowing the FDA to change their message? Absolutely not. The FDA has changed their message because society has changed, and because this is part of the, you know, movement of sexual freedom, and all behaviors and activities are okay. So that's why the FDA changed their website. Now I'm lost. Where did I go? You had asked me about condoms.
Right. Well, and I mean, I appreciate you taking us down that path, because I think that that is, again, part of the information that is so surprising and appalling. Why in the world the FDA would do that? You know, and what we are supposed to be doing in the face of our government agencies, which are charged with coming up with guidelines for us, what are we supposed to do when these guidelines are not based in science and not necessarily based in the best interest of a healthy life? And that's, I guess, more important than ideology, than, you know, I know you're a spiritual person. I'm a spiritual person. Our primary focus here is helping people in the spiritual aftermath of having made what God calls sinful choices. And, you know, there's forgiveness. I don't want to, you know, jump into that group that condemns anyone. That's not what we're here for. But we're here to say, how in the world did we get to this crossroads where up is down, where good is bad and bad is good? And Dr. Grossman's helping us to understand this. And if there's more to say on condoms and protecting against sexually transmitted diseases, please continue.
Well, the way that you put it very well, and the way that this happened is that the ideology penetrated the health organizations and the federal government health organizations as well. Political correctness, being unable to speak the truth, really, because the truth, the biological truths, offend certain groups, and so therefore they're not said. And not to sound, you know, self-righteous, but I took an oath when I graduated from medical school, and I raised my right hand and I said that I promised to prevent disease whenever I could, and I really take that oath seriously. I can't understand why my colleagues are not, many of my colleagues do not seem as bothered as I am by this, and they're seeing it right in front of them. They're seeing the STDs, and they're seeing, you know, the 15-year-old girls who have cervical cancer, and all of this is 100% preventable. Now, it's very difficult to postpone sexual behavior until adulthood and until marriage. Of course, the ideal from a medical point of view is to have one lifelong partner. When two people get together who are virgins and they stay together in a monogamous relationship, they don't have to worry about any of these STDs and so on and so forth. So from a medical point of view, that's ideal. Is it difficult? Of course it's difficult. But people do it all the time, and they survive to talk about it, believe it or not.
Dr. Grossman, we are out of time. We could probably talk for hours more on end, but I really appreciate you being available for us for this conversation. And if you'd like to know more, you can access Dr. Grossman's materials. We're linked at cradlemyheart.org, or simply go to her website, miriamgrossmanmd.com, and look for her books, Unprotected, You're Teaching My Child What, and again, the extremely helpful little booklet, Sex and Sensuality. Dr. Grossman, thank you for being our guest.
Thanks so much, Kim.